And I kind of felt like, you know, as a Black woman who is strong and successful and courageous and loving and kind, like, I would love that opportunity to be able to really input into another Black girl and raise her up to be an amazing Black woman. Because we don't, you know, we don't have enough of that in South Africa.
Hey mama, welcome to the Whole Mama Show. I'm Aisha O'Reilly, and we're revealing the untold stories of motherhood. I think when the majority of us think of motherhood, we think of the children a woman conceived, carried in pregnancy, and birthed. But as you know, my podcast is about sharing the often untold stories of motherhood. And one version of this journey that we don't hear about often is that of adoption. While many families adopt children, especially those related to them, official adoption is still not practiced often. According to the South African Adoption Assistance Center, adoption rates in the country have been static for the past 6 years, despite there being a growing number of orphaned and abandoned children. You're not the only mama who adopted a child. Bongi's road to motherhood was two-pronged, biological and adoptive. Because she always knew that she wanted to adopt a child, she and her husband initially went off contraception and applied for adoption at the same time, before conceiving their first child biologically. She shared her story of adopting her daughter with me remotely. Hi, Bongi. How are you?
Hi, how are you doing? I'm good.
I'm also good. So for the benefit of my listeners, can you please let them know who you are, what you do, and who your family is?
So, as you've said, I'm Bongi Hill. I am a doctor. I work specifically in pediatrics. I'm a wife and I'm a mom to two cute little kids. My son is 5, Lukanyo, and my daughter is 2, Esona. Lukanyo is my biological child and Esona is an adopted child, but both equally loved, treasured, and valued. We live on a farm in Tilbach in the Western Cape. So I work full-time as a doctor, but I have a side hustle. I'm doing social media influencing and blogging on Instagram mainly, but also Facebook. Yeah, we share about my gentle parenting journey and our farm life, love for nature and adventure and travel. Also touch on play, and we are obviously a family that's intentional about green living and being low tox. So I share a lot about that as well. And I'm a runner and love fitness. So yeah, talk about that too in my space.
I know this, you probably get this all the time, but I really would like to know, especially because you are a doctor and it's such a demanding job, how do you actually, you know, do this side hustle influencing of yours while you're being a full-time doctor?
So how do I find the time? It's a big struggle for me, but I do have an amazing support system. My husband is super supportive. We have a nanny, a part-time nanny, who helps with the kids. So I do find time in between. So on my off days, in the evenings, early mornings, I try and fit in the social media stuff. As a result, I don't take on a lot of things. I only take on things that I'm specifically passionate about and that align with my values and my family's values. So it's not the main aspect of my life. It's very much a side thing.
Cool. All right. So can you please share with us, how did you become a mom?
I'm one of those people who love children, basically, since I was a child myself. You get those people who at church or whatever are always like playing with babies and holding babies. And I was that person from a very young age. I could relate to small kids and babies, and I knew I wanted to be a mom. But I've always been very open about how I become a mom. I had no strong attachment to pregnancy. I was like, I would like to be a mom. There's children who need parents, and hey, I'm putting my hand up. So I actually never wanted biological children. But obviously, when you get married, you have to take your partner's desires into consideration. Before we even got married, my husband and I had chatted about children and my heart for adoption. So Dean was also very open, but he was definite that he did also want a biological child. So when we were ready to be parents, we essentially pursued both avenues, went off contraception and started the adoption process. But I was one of those people who literally fell pregnant the first time it was possible for me to fall pregnant after stopping contraception. So, yeah, so that was just the route that we ended up taking with our first child.
So can you take us through the process of adoption and how it works exactly? Because especially for my benefit and, you know, the listeners as well, who might not know the specifics as to what it actually takes to adopt a child.
Essentially, in South Africa, there's two different streams for a formal adoption. It can happen through the state or through private social workers and agencies. We went the private social worker agency route, mainly because it was an agency that I already knew well, and through my work situation, and also I had friends who had adopted through this agency. So the agency that we adopted through was ProCare. They are in Wellington, which is close to Tilbag, where we live. The first step for our adoption process was sending them an email and setting up an appointment. Mm-hmm. They start with like an orientation session where they give you a rundown of the process involved and the different steps, what to expect, and give you room to ask questions and kind of get a better understanding about adoption. Apart from that, we spent a lot of time reading, listening to podcasts, following adoptees, blogs, etc., to really understand the whole adoption world and process well, especially from the perspective of adoptees and birth and first moms, because they often don't have much of a voice in the whole process. So that was the first thing, the orientation meeting. Mm-hmm. And then once you've done that, then there is very detailed, I don't know what the state questionnaire is like, but in the private sector, we had to fill in an intense form. It's like open heart surgery of your character, your history, your family. Like, it's intense. It's one of the most intense forms I've ever had to complete. There's absolutely nothing in that form that I would say is not relevant or essential. When you think about actually what it means to adopt another person's child, like, that's a big thing. Mm. And you want to make sure that the agency has really done a thorough investigation and checked. So the other additional things, you need to go for a police clearance, which is a form that you apply for. And then you also need to apply, like, to have evidence that you're not on the sexual offenders list. So these things can take a while, this admin, especially the police clearance and the sexual offenders list clearance. Right. So they recommend that you start all of that early, like as soon as you are ready to adopt, like, go ahead and do that. So we had already applied, we'd done this already when we were fostering. So that helped, because we just literally needed to get it updated, which is much quicker than having to do a brand new application. And then once you've done that and you've got all of that, then they had set up a meeting with a psychologist where they interview you as a couple, if it is a couple. And then you also have individual interviews with the psychologist. And we did like a psychometric test, like filling in, like it was on a computer, about your thoughts and feelings and all sorts of things. It was very intense. And it's actually such a good check, that session and meeting, because they really look into your childhood and your parenting, if you already are a parent, and kind of make sure that you are mentally and emotionally prepared for adoption, you know, that you are in a good space as individuals, as a couple, to actually receive an adopted child. It was really interesting, because I actually think we probably all people should go through that before they have children as a baseline.
I was just thinking, actually, and this is something that I've seen or like heard of. Even I was thinking that, you know, there's so many people out there who, let's be honest, have no business being parents. But, yeah, you know, a biological child, there's like no questions are asked. You know, as the mother, you go to the hospital or the birth clinic or wherever you give birth. There's no checks. There are no checks to make sure that you are mentally sound, that you're okay, that you'll be able to care for this child. And, you know, obviously it's the, I guess, the hope or the trust that, that you carried on with your pregnancy. You've chosen to keep this child, but the problem is there's so many people that fall through the cracks and, exactly that end up with parents who aren't fit, whether in any kind of capacity, whether it's mentally or financially or whatever it is, to take care of a child. So just listening to what you're saying now, I imagine that the process would be quite intense, but I didn't know that it was this intense as you're explaining. And it should be the case. Yeah.
For sure. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And all of it was necessary. I went through a biological pregnancy and I was already a mom when we started this process.
Right.
And it was quite helpful because I could put myself in the feet of a mom who has carried this child throughout their pregnancy. They love them. This is the bond. They've got hopes and dreams. So I could pause throughout the process and be like, what would I have wanted if I was that mother and at the end of this pregnancy would have to place this child into another family? What would be the checks and balances that I want? And throughout that process, I kept coming back to that. And it was so helpful because I was like, yeah, all of this I would want and more. So I never felt like it was invasive or unnecessary at all. And I was actually really grateful for how they took time to really investigate and prepare us mentally and emotionally for this big, big responsibility. Because it's not the same as having a biological child. It's different. It comes a different way. It's different responsibility. And I think there can be that naivety that, oh, no, you're just going to be a parent. But it's not. It's not that simple. Mm. So I found it very helpful, the process in preparing us and ensuring that we were okay and our family was okay. So what normally happens at the end of this evaluation with the psychologist, they decide, okay, cool, you are emotionally and mentally okay to move forward. Or actually, no, you're not. And then they will refer you like for further therapy or inputs or life skills or whatever specifically they feel you need. And then from there, you have like a group meeting with other prospective adoptive parents where it's kind of going through more of the steps that are to follow, what you need to prepare in your home and things to expect around adoption. And it's quite nice because then you get to talk to other people who are in the same journey as you. Then when all your paperwork is in and sorted, you have like a final meeting with your social worker and member of their legal team to just make sure everything is in order. That is when you become officially adoption approved. During the adoption process, you have to make a profile book. So a book with photos and information about who you are, your family, where you live, and you get messages from grandparents and friends and the people that will be receiving this child, which is actually something that we really enjoyed because the journey into becoming adoptive parents wasn't something that we did alone. Our family and friends got to be involved, actively involved. It was like a community, not project, but it was like a community journey to adoption, not like we were just on it on our own. Like our parents had to be on board, our siblings, our friends. And I actually felt like it was much more special in that way than the biological journey to parenting because everyone was involved in this. And I know once we'd handed in our profile and we were approved, it was like every day check-in. So any updates, have you heard? So whereas if you are trying for a child, like people are not asking you every week, so have you conceived yet?
Well, some people don't, but some others do.
Yeah, I'm not sure to have people not have people like that in my life, I guess.
that's really nice, yeah. Though. Did you have any kind of resistance, or was it pretty much everybody who was important enough to be in your life that they were on board?
Oh, yeah, no, we had no resistance from the people that are close to us. My family had always known that I was going to adopt. It was something that I spoke about probably when I was young. Mm. So it wasn't a surprise. you know, parents know, you share things when you're a child, and they kind of like, okay, well, maybe, maybe not. So yeah. They were aware it was something in my heart and that I'd spoken about for years. And I think it very much fits with who we are, Dean and I. So no one was surprised, you know, so it wasn't a shock or a surprise for anyone.
You mentioned that private adoption and through the state, you know, are quite different. About how long did that take for you? I know, obviously, it's not going to be the same necessarily for other couples, but just in case adoptive mom is listening to this now, just to maybe give her a bit of an idea about how long did it take?
It normally takes anything typically from 6 months to a year. For all these different steps, you kind of need to wait for appointments and availability and all of that. I think the private sector seems to work quicker than the state, from what I've heard. There's a big cost difference if going through the state versus private, same as private hospital versus public hospital. Right. The cost difference is quite big.
And that's something else, actually. It feels a bit, you know, just in terms of talking about money and adoption, but it is part of the process and the consideration that parents should, you know, should have as part of their expectations. Is that, can you share a little bit, even if it's just, you know, between this amount to that amount?
Yeah, I'm totally fine to share.
Yeah.
So when you have your first meeting, they explain exactly what the money is used for. So obviously the social workers need to be paid and the agencies, etc. But it also covers the healthcare and checks of the birth moms and first moms and their mental health support and their physical health support. And also the babies also get covered through these charters. So if there must be doctor's visits or whatever, they also use this money.
Okay.
And sometimes it ends up being more. So like, for example, let's say you get matched with a baby and they needed additional doctor's visits or whatever else, then it does end up being more. So we ended up paying around 35,000 for everything.
Okay.
That's including the police clearances and stuff that we had to apply for. And actually, when I looked at the sums, it's pretty similar to what we would have paid. I mean, if you don't have a medical aid, what you would have paid for like gynae visits, antenatal care, a birth at a hospital, and all those things.
Yeah.
It's much more affordable and accessible going through the state route, the government route. But it was important for us that we go through an agency that we know and has a good reputation in terms of how they care for the birth moms and how they care for the prospective adopted parents. That was why we were happy. I mean, we can also afford it. We were happy and preferred to go with this specific private agency. So there is a home visit.
Okay.
Before your final, the day that you are finally approved, there is a home visit. So the social worker comes to your house to make sure it's like a safe place, like, and you're not lying, essentially. Our social worker didn't even go beyond our kitchen. She came to the kitchen. We had a cup of tea. She chatted to Lukanya for ages, playing. He took her for a walk around the garden. So it really was just a meet and greet, make sure it's a safe place and it's all real and legitimate. It didn't feel like we were being investigated, which I think some parents, when they hear the term home visit, they kind of think like their house must be spick and span and the baby room must be ready and decorated. Right. No, that it was just like, hey, let's see you in your home environment and make sure that it's a safe home environment. So when we were adopting, we were open to a boy or a girl or whatever. We were just like, you know, it's fine. It's not that important to us. So she came back from this walk and was like, Lukanyo wants a baby sister.
No.
Very clear that he wants a baby sister. So I don't know. They obviously had this conversation. Part of the preparation when you already have another child is that you really have to bring the first child or whatever, the other children, bring them into the whole process and make them feel part of it and let them have ownership. So every step of the way, like Lukanya was involved, like with making the book and, you know, everything, we tried to make it as visual and really include him in the process. And she said, you know what, there's not a lot in this process where he gets to be the center, but he has actually clearly said he wants a baby sister. And I think you should honor that. So that was from the social worker. And I was still like, oh, no, I don't know. And so we kind of, but she felt it was quite important that he had said that. Yeah. So, you know, 80%, I was like, we probably will end up being matched with the girl, but there was that 20% that was not sure. I'm very glad that she gave us that advice. Mm. And because he was so happy. That was his heart. That's what he wanted. And it really helped having him on board and excited with us.
That's really sweet. Because that was going to be my next sort of question, just asking about how much choice, I guess, do you have in what kind of child is placed in your home, from a gender point of view to a race point of view? I mean, your family is multiracial. You're Black African and Dean is white, and you have your biological son, Lucanio, who's obviously mixed race, biracial. And so then bringing in another child into the house, we've touched on the gender part, that you weren't necessarily being picky about it, although Lucanio already gave his opinion, which was great. But when it came to the race of the child that you were going to adopt, was that ever discussed or agreed on beforehand, or did you just sort of just leave it?
So when you do that initial questionnaire that I mentioned, one of the things that they go through, they go into quite a lot of details about what would be a yes or a no for you. Mm. I mean, to the extent, you know, we had to consider things that we haven't thought about. Like they asked, would you be willing to adopt a child born out of incest, for example, or a child born out of rape? So it's really quite intense questions. They go into every single little detail and ask about the health aspects, things that you'd be okay with and not okay with. And you can be as specific as you want to be as a prospective adoptive parent. But obviously, the more specific you are, you kind of narrow your opportunity for a child who's going to match you, because they really do try to match babies and parents according to the parents' desires, and they look at the child and the personality and the history. Does it fit with this family? We were specific that we wanted a baby under a year because we felt like it was important that Lucanio is the older brother, so we kind of follow the natural order of the family. We felt that was quite important, and for early bonding. And race-wise, we also didn't have specifications. But I do remember the day that we were adoption approved, as we were driving home, I said to Dean, you know I probably shouldn't say this out loud, but I would love to be able to raise a Black daughter in this world. I was totally open to whatever race. But obviously, as a Black woman, thinking of the perspective that if I had to be the birth mom or the first mom, what I would want for my girl, you know, who I would want them to be raised by, I would want them to have a Black mother. Mm-hmm. And I don't feel bad or ashamed. That's truly what I feel, because they understand your perspective and the things, the challenges that you will face. And I kind of felt like, you know, as a Black woman who is strong and successful and courageous and loving and kind, like, I would love that opportunity to be able to really input into another Black girl and raise her up to be an amazing Black woman. Because we don't, you know, we don't have enough of that in South Africa. And because there are not a lot of Black adoptive parents, I think a lot of Black children don't end up being raised in that way. But he's like, yeah, I think he would really be a great mom to a Black child. He obviously didn't mind. He was like, he was totally open. If it hadn't happened that way, we would have been completely fine as well. But it was the first time that I actually verbalized that desire. It was like a small little thing in my heart, not a major thing. So when we were matched to a Black girl, I was very happy.
Yeah.
Because I felt like this is a good fit. And just it aligned with like a lot of what was on my heart. Just being able to raise Esona is such a privilege.
Mm, you've sort of touched on it a little bit, but can you share a little bit more about the day that, you know, you finally heard the news that Esona was matched to you and your family?
So our adoption was approved. It was, I think it was the 25th of October. in 2018? Yes, it was 2018. And then on the 19th of November, I got the call that we had been matched. At the time, my husband was away in Japan on a work trip, and we had actually specifically asked the social worker, please don't give us the call during this time. We knew we were not expecting it that soon. I just thought, no, I don't want him on the other side of the world when this call happens. But she was like, no, this is usually how it happens when you find out you're pregnant. You're on your own somewhere in the toilet, whatever. You must sit and plan a special way to tell your partner.
Oh.
You're not just going to blurt it out or whatever. Now you've got days to plan something special. And I was just like, why are you doing this? And look, by this time, we'd gotten to know her very well. We had a good relationship with her. And she knew me. And she knows I'm a planner. And, you know, she got to know my character and personality. So I then spent the next few days trying to not tell anyone that we had been matched, trying to be calm. I did tell my best friend. I phoned her and told her immediately because I needed her help in my initial plan to tell Dean. And then somehow figure out how to not bring this up with my husband every time he phones me. So when you come into our house, there's like a long avenue driveway with like vineyards on either side. I went and bought like the girliest of girly extreme clothes. Mm-hmm. And all along the driveway, I'd hung up these clothes, these little onesies or whatever, hairbands, like stuck all along. And I think he probably was so confused. And then at the gate, before you got into the house, I put up a letter board saying, we got the call, and like a pink tutu next to it so that he would know we got the call and it's definitely a girl. So that was what he came home to when he came from Japan. And I did manage to make it special. It was definitely more special than when I told him I was pregnant with Lucanio. I didn't go through that much effort. And it was quick. It was on the 19th, we got the call. And on the 23rd, we had very little time. We were in court, and this one I came home. It was helpful that it was our second time, and we had most of the staff, and, you know, we'd gone through this before. So on the day, we went to the social worker agency, and there we met with the foster parents who had looked after her first. So before we got to meet her, they came in. They chatted to us. They brought like a memory book of everything that, you know, when she came home from the hospital, kind of sharing the past 3 months of her life with us before we met her, which was really, really special. Oh, sorry, I skipped a step. After you get the call, they first bring you in for a meeting where they tell you everything about the child, like who they are, like all the information, the factual information about her, as much as they know about her and her biological family. And then at the end of that, they show you the photos, what she looks like. And they give you 24 hours to say yes or no. So even after you matched, you can still say no.
Okay.
Yeah. So we didn't. We were just like, definitely, yes, we feel at peace. So it was quite intense. So my husband came home on Friday. On the Monday, we were at the social worker. We said yes. And that same Friday, we went to court and welcomed her home. So it was extremely fast. So as I said, now we met with the foster family parents first. They told us about her. And then at the end of that, then they brought her in for us to meet. And Aisha, it was incredible. Like, shoo, I can't tell you how emotional we felt that day. It was just amazing. It didn't feel weird or awkward. It just was like our daughter is here. Like, there was just like this instant knowing that she's ours and she belongs in our family and with us. Like, we felt so at peace and at ease with her. Yeah, it was just incredible. It's different to that moment when you know, you've been through this labor and you're half tired, half awake, and kind of trying to take everything in. I mean, we were fully alert and conscious and could like really appreciate that first meeting and remember it all in detail. I don't know what she wore. I mean, she just kept looking at Dean the whole time. She barely looked at me. So we met her at the agency. And then from there, we took her with us. We went to court. We did all the legal things with the judge. And then we brought her home to meet her brother. It was very special. Oh, it was such a special day.
But I love that you're able to almost compare, not in a bad way, but, you know, in an appreciative way, how different the two experiences were, you know, meeting your biological child and then meeting your adoptive child, and how much more alert you were, and, you know, just comparing the two experiences. I think that's beautiful. And that you were, you know, you're as happy and excited and, you know, to become a mom again. So
yeah.
How integrated, or how soon rather, did you feel that Isona integrated into your family?
So one of the things that they recommend when you've like just adopted a new baby is there's something called cocooning. So like they recommend that as far as possible, you stay at home and you keep only the members of the family, like other people who have contact with them for the first like few weeks or whatever. Because obviously a baby that's just from one home into another, if you're going to be like passing them from hand to hand and moving around, it's going to be difficult for them to realize, okay, this is my new home now, and these are my new parents now, and this is my brother now. Like, they'll be like, who are all these people? Because I mean, they're processing that even at that young age. They start to realize familiarity. So that's what we did for the first 2 weeks. We just stayed at home, and it was just us, the three of us, and obviously the ins and outs of the people who work in our home and on the farm. But otherwise, it was just us. And, you know, I always say this to people, and they just like don't understand it. I found it much easier to bond and connect with Isona than I did with Lucanio. You know, newborns are hard. I mean, you know this acutely now.
Yes.
Newborns are flipping exhausting. I mean, you've just gone through this major life change of like giving birth or whatever, having a Caesar, whatever process, you know, you went through to have a biological child. You're trying to recover from that. You are not sleeping, like constantly waking up for the millions of feeds. Like, it's quite intense and overwhelming.
Yeah.
And then there are these like little shriveled up beings who just lie there all the time. And then you just feed them and clean their nappies. And, like, I'm being very, very like basic here about newborn. I'm not a newborn lover, clearly. But
neither am
so I found that quite difficult. Like, I was exhausted, and I'm like, this little person is not giving me anything back here. There's no smiles, there's nothing. So I really struggled with him, because especially when you come from an intensely professional environment, like I literally worked until 39 weeks, and I went from that to suddenly being at home with a newborn every day. So it was a really big transition, and I didn't love it. So I struggled with that bonding initially. But with Isona, I knew I had little time with her, and I was so like open and ready for the bonding and everything, because it was a different process. I had missed out on all that other time. So I was more intentional and more open and more prepared. And she was so much easier. She was this cute little being who smiled and cooed and giggled, so content, so easy. I mean, at 3 months, she was 3 months when she came. And I think that's, for me, the age where babies become extremely lovable, you know, like anyone can love them. Yeah. And that was one thing that made it much easier. Like, Lucanio could tickle her and she would respond and engage, and he would be so excited. Oh, my baby sister laughed. My baby sister smiled. And I think that was so awesome that he could have that feedback. And it made it much easier for us to also connect, because, you know, she was just at such a lovable age. It was like challenging for her to sort of get integrated into our home environment. Like, she struggled, I remember, with the dogs, because the dogs would often, if the dogs would bark, like her whole body would like tense up. So small little things like that I could see, like, these are not things she's comfortable like with. She still needs time to adapt to this environment. But in terms of relating to us, like, that was so easy. It was seamless. It felt like, yeah, she was always there and meant to be there. it was incredible to see how easy Lucanio took to the big brother role and becoming the helper, and so proud and so excited. Like, I was so nervous when we did eventually start having people visiting us, because for all the years he had all the attention, it was all about him.
Yeah.
But when people arrived, the first thing we would like take their hand and like, you need to meet my baby sister Isona. He was so excited and so proud of people to like come and meet her and know her. So yeah, it was actually not a difficult bonding process for us. And Dean even said like he found it easier too, because I wasn't breastfeeding obviously with her, whereas with Lucanio she was like permanently attached to me, so right. He kind of felt like he was more of a supportive role in the early months, but he felt with Isona he could step in and be more involved early on, and it helped him to bond quicker with her.
That's so interesting, and I totally agree. Like, you know how you were saying a lot of people are surprised when you say this? I was also surprised that, you know, when you mentioned that you bonded quicker with Isona than you did with Lucanio. But now that you've explained it, it makes so much sense, especially with the newborn thing. Like you said, I know all too well with the whole new, and that's something I, you know, after I had Kai, people will be like, oh, don't you just miss this stage, you know, when we visit friends who just had babies. And I'll be like, no, I don't.
It's yeah, funny. No. I relate 100%.
I mean, it's like, yes, you love your child because, you know, they're your child, but definitely that bonding, the, you know, the sort of, you almost form a bit of a rapport, you know, but only after a couple of months. So that makes makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. And I'm more of a toddler mom. Like, yeah. I love it when they become actual little people who talk and engage and are learning. Right? Like, I love that.
Yeah.
I'm definitely more of an affinity for that. Not that I don't like small babies,
yeah,
but that phase and stage for me, I think I also like the way it challenges me, not just like a physical, emotional challenge, but also like a mental, it's more stimulating and I can engage with the child more.
Mm.
Yeah. I just like being able to do meatier parenting at that stage.
Yeah, that's
versus
nice.
Just like boob. Poop yes. and bath.
That's a nice way of explaining it. A meatier version of parenting. That's so true. So earlier you mentioned that, you know, there aren't many Black adoptive parents really, and for many different reasons. And I think that also in many African countries, we sort of, you know, in quotes, unofficially adopted children for a long time. But this sort of, you know, official kind of route of doing it is still quite new, and there aren't many Black adoptive parents. So what would be your advice to share with a fellow Black woman who's considering adopting? Because at least on your side, the majority of your family and your friends were, you know, that they were very supportive, as you said, they, you know, welcomed the entire process and Isona with open arms. But there might be some pushback with other people's families and other people's friends. So what advice can you share with someone who's in that position?
I think the most important thing is that you need to understand that as much as you've gone through a journey and a process to get to that decision of deciding to adopt, like, your family is also going to need to go through a journey and a process. Like, so you need to give them grace to come on board. So, I mean, I was obviously something that it was open about from a young age. So my family had time to think about it and to process it all. But for some parents, it might happen maybe later in life and for different reasons, perhaps you find that you are unable to have biological children and you then choose to adopt. And it's not necessarily something that was in your plan or you anticipated or you know, your family had ever thought about. And I think it's quite important to have that grace and have that patience with them and give them room to ask questions and challenge some things and not to be combative about it. Because I think once we become combative, it's going to put up stronger walls and more resistance. And it's very hard when you have set ways of thinking and wanting to do things to actually be graceful and be patient. And I know this because in some aspects of my life, my family hasn't agreed and it hasn't always gone smoothly. But I've had to learn to be more patient and show more grace. And I think it's important in this journey because, you know, as I said in the beginning, you're not just adopting a child to your nuclear family. You're not. Like, you are bringing them into a bigger environment.
Right.
And I would actually say if your extended family and your friends are not supportive, don't do it. Don't bring a child into a hostile environment. It's not fair. And I've heard people say things like, oh, when the child is here, they'll love the child and accept it. And I feel like this is not a game. Like, you know, it's not something to toy around with. So I don't feel comfortable with people adopting if the families and stuff are not supportive, because it's already going to be hard for that child as an adopted child, full stop. They're not going to have it easy. There's a lot for them to process as they get older. A lot of insecurity that they're going to feel, a lot of questions about, do they belong? Are they loved? Are they wanted? And if now you're adopting them into an extended family and community that doesn't support the adoption, it's going to be a nightmare. For the child's sake, I wouldn't recommend that. If you've gone through kind of talking to your family, educating them, like I sent my family loads of information. My dad, actually, they have a conference called Arise. Like, it's like an information conference for prospective parents and families, whoever who is interested in learning about adoption. And I actually asked my dad to go. There was one in Joburg or Pretoria. I can't remember where. It was close to where he lives. So I asked him to go. Although he was supportive, but he learned a whole lot more about adoption than what he had previously understood. And he came back with questions and things to challenge. So I think as much as you're educating yourself, you also need to educate your family and kind of walk that journey with them. And if they're not supportive, I don't believe you should adopt. It's a very strong opinion, but I think for the sake of the child, I wouldn't. I think most agencies won't encourage you.
Yeah.
To go forward with an adoption if the family is not supportive.
Mm. No, that's very interesting. I think that's going to be helpful. So Bongi, can you share what's your whole mama truth?
I think my biggest whole mama truth of this year specifically, like something big that I've learned as a mom this year, is an importance of looking after myself and investing more in myself. I think my early motherhood years were very much focused on my kids. It was all about them. And especially when we adopted Isona, like I actually went through a process of like a lot of guilt. Like, yeah, I think because I missed out on so much time with her and I was very intentional about bonding and connecting, I sort of really poured a lot more into her and was very guilty about taking time for myself and doing things for myself. I struggled with that. And it's not like having a face mask on a Sunday evening type of care, but like looking after my emotional and mental health and my physical health, like a more deeper level of care, if that makes sense to you. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of us mothers, we kind of lose ourselves. We lose our identity and our goals, and we stop to prioritize ourselves in those early motherhood years. So I think my whole mama truth would be, don't forget you. You are important and you need to be well.
Totally agree with that. Oh, Bongi, thank you so much. It's just so insightful, you know? So thank you so much. Thanks for joining me.
Thanks, Aisha. Thanks for having me and creating the space for me and other moms to just share their hearts and journeys. It's really special and much appreciated.
Thank you. And before you go, where can we find you online?
You can find me on Instagram. My handle is Ndibambe, @Ndibambe. Oh, sorry, I'm tired. Ndibambe. yeah, that's where you can find me. And my Facebook handle is the same.
Okay, so I will put Bongi's details in the little description so you can check out her pages.
I really enjoyed this chat with Bongi. I learned so many things about adoption, and it really made me remember that it's not just the couple who has to receive a child. It's the whole village that will be supporting the parents and raising them. There's so much information that we don't readily know about when it comes to adoption, even though it is a realistic and viable route to parenthood for many couples. Thanks for tuning in. If you're enjoying my podcast, I'd really appreciate your support to reach more women. You can do that by leaving a quick one-liner review, giving it a rating out of 5, subscribing, or sharing it on your social media. And to really help, you can, of course, do all 4 of those steps. As always, I'd love to hear from you. You can find me on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, or YouTube at Aisha and Life. That's AISHAANDLIFE. You can also find my honest journey in motherhood on my blog, aishaandlife.com. Again, I'm Aisha O'Reilly, and I hope this episode has left you feeling a little bit more whole, mama.